everyone. Just a reminder that we are on YouTube. Today we'll be speaking about Baltic, and we'll also be joined by a new guest, George from Watch Yourself George. And I believe that's his same name on YouTube and on Insta. So welcome, George.
Hello there, welcome. Thank you for having me, rather.
No problem with it.
Not your show, not yet.
Take over. But yeah, lovely to have you on. We've had conversations, so it's lovely to have you join us. Great to see the work you're doing as well with your partner Terry on the YouTube and on Instagram as well. So yeah, lovely to have you on.
Brilliant. I think we're doing risk check first. So is it going to be me first? It's going to be me. So mine isn't just a risk check. Mine is a new watch alert. We don't have a Klaxon or anything. Maybe we can add one. But I finally got my Grail watch I've always wanted. So let's see if the camera picks it up. Kind of. There we go. It is Chez Lacoutre Reverso from the early 1990s. It is, I know I don't like references, but a lot of people do. So it's reference 250.8.86. Ooh. And it's a rose gold. It's just a monophase, but it's absolutely beautiful with a black dial. Like I said, rose gold, sort of harking back to, like, you know, 1930s. Really, really love it. Always wanted it. The new ones are great too, but this was half the price of the new ones. Okay, we don't do money on this show because my wife found out, she'd probably shoot me. So not as pricey as it could be if she is listening, to which she's not. Absolutely love it. And again, you know, with all the little sort of lances and pointers, you know, going into the dial, it's sort of like a sunbeam. It's wonderful, absolutely incredible. And I just had to pull the trigger. Did it through eBay as well with their sort of trusted seller programs. I hadn't bought anything through that before. A little bit nervous, but obviously you buy the seller, not the watch. And he was incredible. So really, really happy with that. But it does mean selling. So my Cartier Centre will have to go. So Sam from the Watch Concierge is actually going to be selling that shortly. So again, we had her on the show a couple of months ago. So it's good to have these connections, right? And then my JLC Uni plan from the 1950s, which I do love, will have to go to make way. So two watch sales for one reverso. I think it's just about justified. Zach, what do you think about that? And what's your risk check?
Yeah, definitely. First of all, it's kind of sad to see those two watches go. I kind of think I remember when we first met through the Watch Collectors Club, and I think you had the Uni plan. What a great watch it was. So sad to see that one go, as well as the Cintra. I mean, it was great. It had its arrival. I think I've seen you wear it a few times. Can't go wrong with the Cintra Cartier. So yeah, but also props to you on getting a rose gold watch. I kind of feel like this is kind of the best season to look for a gold/spring/summer watch. Hopefully that will kind of, your watch will kind of nudge the weather, because it's still, I feel like we're still stuck in December, but yeah, hopefully it can bring some more sun.
Still very bleak.
Yeah, absolutely. But gorgeous watch. Congrats.
Hasn't left my wrist yet. So I've had it for like 2 weeks.
Lovely. Wear it in good health. So today I have on a 1980s vintage. Again, I'm not too sure if that'll come up on the camera. 1980s vintage Hamilton automatic. And it's a watch that I don't really wear as often, so I'm trying to get a bit more wrist time. So yeah, that's what I have on today. How about you, George?
So actually I'm not wearing one of mine today, and it was really hard to pick what I wanted to wear on your amazing podcast. So I actually picked the watch that I wore, or that we've done our most recent review on, which is the Rolex Oyster Perpetual. I'll see if it picks up on the camera. 36mm celebration dial. Wow. I have absolutely fallen in love with it, especially the form factor at 36mm. Obviously very recently discontinued, very graciously lent to us by Fizz Watch Owners Enthusiasts on Instagram. Great watch. I've absolutely loved wearing it. Nothing as terrifying as borrowing someone else's watch, which is currently retail or currently selling at 11-12 grand.
Wow, yeah.
On the aftermarket. And for some reason I was brave enough to wear it out in public. Who knows why, but yeah.
With a bodyguard, right?
Yeah, I should do. But it's just so beautiful.
Yeah. That's amazing. I think I saw your watch review as well with it, and I was like, wow, what a watch. And what I liked is how you kind of decorated it. I think it's on your post, you kind of put like sweets around. So that was kind of cool nod to the design of the watch as well. But yeah, I haven't seen one in the flesh. I mean, I'm still through a laptop, but yeah, I bet it looks mega.
Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous. The dial, it's obviously very flat in design. There's nothing in the motif that stands proud, but I think it would be too busy if there was. And weirdly for Rolex, it's the same price as a normal Oyster Perpetual at this size, even though the dial costs more to make. So yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. There you go. Cool. Right, so we've got a small segment that we do. You know, we call it watch news. Again, we're not watch journalists, so you know other people do it far better than we do. But there's sometimes a watch that just stands out a release, and we just have to mention it briefly. And George, I think you had it on one of your episodes recently as well. So that is the Omega Speedmaster Moonphase. Moonphase Meteorite. Again, I love the Meteorite dial. I went Seamaster myself over Speedmaster in my own collection, but I can see why it's such a popular watch. You know, this variation is absolutely standout, but so's the price. Not sure that I would dilute my whole collection for it, but it's kind of tempting in some ways. Two color options, a gray one, which I prefer. And I love the contrast with the bezel to the dial. It's almost like an etching, which I really, really like. And again, you know, sort of the subdials pop, which I really like. And you're drawn to the moon phase, sort of, you know, instantly. I mean, like I said, George, you did a really good episode on your channel. So just sort of tell listeners your thoughts, whether it's changed from the last time you did it, or are you sticking to your guns?
It's changed slightly, but not in a positive way.
Oh, controversy.
Yeah, so I think they've done a lot of really cool, really exciting things with this model, in all honesty. I think versus the old Speedmaster Moonphase, it's a much better size. The old one was giant. It was a over 44 millimeter watch. And in all honesty, it was 17 millimeters thick. It was unwieldy. It was a beast. Versus the new one that's 43 millimeters and it is 13 and a half millimeters thick. So it's a lot more wearable. I really like that element of it. The Meteorite on a Speedmaster that's known for going to the moon, made this joke in the video. It's literally out of this world. As you just alluded to, though, it's just too much money.
Yeah.
I'd much rather they did the watch that's it was called the gray side of the moon.
Hmm. Okay.
I don't think that it's still on the website, but the gray side of the moon was beautiful. That had a meteorite dial, and it also had a gold bezel, and that was actually less.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. I'm going to see if I can find it.
Zach, what do you think about it? Well, George goes to see if you can ping up on the internet.
Yeah, definitely. To be honest, I wasn't too sure about the case size. I guess it is slightly on the larger kind of larger side of things. But to be honest, I kind of feel like it's a great watch if I'm judging by, you know, the kind of designs and materials. I'm a big fan of Omega. I think, Tim, you are also.
Favorite brand.
Yeah, same. Favorite brand for me too. And I feel like it's because of like kind of releases like this that kind of tie in the kind of historic design language with kind of new kind of updates always have us kind of guessing. So I kind of love this. I love this piece. I'd probably more into the vintage side of things, but I think for this watch it's definitely piqued my interest. Like you as well, Tim, I like the black and gray variant, but the blue, I think it's blue and like light gray or silvery, that does also look good, but I'd like the kind of stealthy of the black and gray, the moody look. So I definitely like this one.
Just not the price.
Yeah, the price is a bit hefty. Does anyone know how much it is roughly? I didn't actually see the price. Ballpark.
It's 16,100.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty insane.
I found the watch I was talking about.
Yeah.
18 carat rose gold bezel.
Wow.
Grey ceramic case.
Wow.
Meteorite dial.
Yeah.
gold hands and everything. It's the 44 millimeter case, and again, £16,100. So I think that probably represents better value for money than the new one.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Better value for money.
Well, yeah, you got gold there. Gold in it for sure. Yeah,
exactly. Cool. So yeah, we'll move on from that watch. So I was going to just, we often also talk about like things we've done in the last month, whether it's, you know, like a watch meetup or whatever. And I was able to, again, you know, the great guys at the Watch Collectors Club, Ed and Hamish, they had a meetup at Fathom Watches, which is just next to St. Paul's Cathedral. Hadn't been there before, but they were great hosts. And as people know, I'm not the biggest fan of Rolex, and it was a Submariner night, but I did have a growing appreciation. I know, Zach, you love them, and George, do you too. But you can check out a reel that I did of them. But I mean, one of the main reasons I don't really like the modern sub is the edge of the bezel always looks to me like a bit of like a jagged tin opener. I don't really like it. I just prefer vintage anyway, and the jagged edges just don't appeal, you know. It's less pronounced on the vintage. And again, you don't get it on a Tudor Black by 58, which is obviously what Zach used to have and what I do have. But back to the actual visit itself. They had the Bond watch there. You know, it was superb, sort of patina on the dial. It felt really light as well compared to other Submariners, which I wasn't really sort of prepared for. Tried on a vintage GMT, and it had like excellent lume on it. Handled more modern varieties as well. I think the Kermit, I think that's what they call it, one of the green ones. Again, if I ever went for Rolex, it would just have to be vintage. Zach, you know, I don't think you've been to Fathom Watches, but yeah, it was a great event. You should definitely check it out and do more Watch Collector Club visits.
Yeah, definitely. It sounded like a really good event. I think I saw a reel? I think you had a reel up.
The event. Yeah. And put the James Bond theme on, obviously.
Yeah, exactly, which was cool. Very creative. Yeah, I think I definitely need to keep a lookout on the Watch Collectors Club events, because that was a really good one. So well done to them, and also well done to Fathom Watches also. I saw a lot of very cool vintage watches, including the Kermit, like you mentioned, the Pepsi, vintage Pepsis and vintage subs. I would say I lean more towards the vintage as well. So it's always interesting to see those. But I also don't mind some of the newer Rolexes that come out. As well, but yeah, I think vintage has more of a story to them. But yeah, I'd love to kind of look out and see what kind of cool vintage Rolex events are happening, especially the Bond watch is very cool. So yeah, that's awesome.
But they are more than the meteorite dial Omega. Yeah. So you may have to. The Bank of England's nearby, so you can always rob them, right?
That's true. I think I met a guy, I think at one of the watch collectors events, and he explained how he purchased his Kermit for like under 5K or something, or around, yeah, just under 5K, like some time ago. And I was just like, wow, that's insane, because they're like almost triple that now. But yeah, he's a lucky guy for sure.
Probably before the financial crash in 08.
Yeah.
Right? When things were a bit
cheap. That's true. But I think you also mentioned how, like, in Watches of Switzerland and other kind of like authorized dealers, that a lot of watches that are like thriving now were like on discount. So I was like, that's amazing. Imagine getting like a hyped up watch now, or like a super valuable watch now on discount. So it's kind of like getting early Bitcoin, but not on that scale, I guess. Not on that huge of a scale.
No. Right. Should we pivot to watches we're lusting after, which is probably one of my favorite sections, along with that we're into shots of the month. So we did a Breitling episode, didn't we, a few months ago now. And we didn't talk that much about the Super Ocean, because I never really liked it, right? But then on Instagram, as with all things, a vintage one popped up. And it was just, it knocked me for six. And again, I'll do the references. The reference is 2005, and I put it in our little chat as well. And we can sort of, you know, we'll flash it up on screen. But the reason why I love it is you've got sort of the black inner dial, you've got the white thinner outer dial, and it provides this wonderful contrast. And then it's finished with that black bezel. It's got this huge sort of dot loomed indices, and it's coupled with that sort of red circular sort of, you know, pip at the 12 position. I love that. A bit like the, you know, the triangle on the Black Bay 58. Solid proper pushers in a style that I like. And finally, it's got that, obviously, that snowflake-esque second hand with that sort of huge dollop of lume. You know, Breitling, they've got wonderful sort of back catalogues. And I know they're bringing, you know, Universal Genève back. But, you know, I think they need to bring back their vintage looking watches. Some of the stuff they're bringing out recently, I haven't been a big fan of. I looked at the price of this vintage reference, quite pricey for this vintage. That's probably the only negative, but I'm very much lusting after it. Zach, what do you think about that? And what one have you gone for this time around?
Yeah, definitely. Well, first of all, incredible, incredible watch. Yeah, I love the kind of the look of it. I think you mentioned like this, it's solid pushers. And this one looks to be in like a amazing condition from a watch from 1968. So I think that's a great watch to kind of look out for. You kind of mentioned price and it being expensive, but I'm not surprised why this one would be quite expensive given its condition as well. So yeah, that's an amazing, amazing choice. And for me, the watch that I'm lusting over is the Rolex that I also sent in the chat as well, which is a vintage Rolex Day-Date. Reference 6612B. The watch is on a crocodile strap, the one that I was looking at, a polished crocodile strap, brown crocodile strap. And I don't know, there's something more alluring about the vintage day dates for me. It could be through, I guess, certain presidents wearing vintage Rolex or just seeing them on kind of like different movies. But like the vintage gold day date has always been something that I've kind of looked into. But this one is quite nice in particular as well, I'd say, because as you know, living in London, it's quite hard to wear any kind of nice watch. And if you had the original day date with the gold bracelet, then you might find yourself in a bit of a problem. Certainly. So coupling it with a leather strap, I think makes it even look a bit more classier, might I say. But then also takes away that kind of like profile or kind of you know, extra attention that you probably wouldn't want whilst wearing it out. So yeah,
no, it's definitely nice. Before we hit record, George and I were talking about his love of date windows and my absolute disgust of date windows. But I think if I was going to have a date window, then these ones I think are just about passable. But I don't know, George, what you think about that. I'm sure you love the date window on these ones.
Yeah, I think the execution on the day-date is one of my favourites of a day-date complication, because it just looks so well balanced. Mm. It's beautiful. Obviously, you said you love symmetry. It's got a mix of balance, and also yep. The Cyclops is something I do like. For me, the day-date is a little bit of a grail piece. I'm a particular fan of the olive dial. In the modern catalogue, olive dial, white gold, beautiful.
Wonderful. And we're talking about my love of symmetry and your dislike of symmetry. So we should have just ended before we even began. I'd be like, oh my gosh. But, you know, each to their own. We all have our loves and lusts and foibles as well. So there you go. Actually, we should have a whole episode, just like a face-off of all the watches that have day dates or it'll have symmetry or not symmetry. But yeah, there we go. Cool. Shall we pivot to our next section, which is watch shots of the month from Instagram? I'll go first. I think I've got my one up in the chat. And then obviously, Zach, you'll be picking the winner and they'll get our wonderful, wonderful beer mat, which more people need to use and put in their watch props, right? That's what we're going for. So which ones did I pick? Let's have a look here. So in no particular order, although there is a bit of a theme for at least two of them. So shout out to the watch. We'll flash it up on screen. He's got this wonderful Grand Seiko spring drive, and it does have a date window, but I can look past that. And it's got this wonderful background of sort of basically just like ice. You know, when, again, I don't know if he's British, but again, around the world, it was, you know, pretty bleak in the Northern Hemisphere for weather in the last few weeks, but it just looks so good with the sort of white dial and the actual ice in the background. It's got some good bokeh effects and shadowing, so I really like that. And then following up, similar again, average watch dads. I do really like his shots sort of more generally, but he's got this brilliant Rolex Submariner with no date, so well done. And again, that's a sort of like an ice effect, but it's looking sort of straight at it as opposed to on its side. And I really, really like that one. Again, good lighting effect. And then the final one, we collectively like stone dials. And we've had Philippe on before. We've mentioned some of his amazing watches and shots. And it's this Audemars Piguet sort of jade dial. I mean, it's just, it's wonderful bezel to it as well. It's just, yeah, it's almost like studded. And again, I went for the, we're going to talk about Baltic later, and obviously I went for the lapis dial, but they had a jade one, and I'm sort of kicking myself I didn't get that. But this jade dial is something else. Yeah, absolutely love it. Zach, I don't know what you think about those ones, and then obviously follow up with yours. And then George, chip in with any reflections as well. So we do like our guests to be like, oh, I like this one, or I don't like that one. So yeah, Zach, what do you think?
Absolutely. Another great free choices there, Tim, with nice variations. Yeah, I kind of feel like I love the watch and average watch dad, and how they're kind of risking putting their watches out in the snow, albeit they're kind of made for those kind of conditions, I guess, them being kind of sports models and being around water. But yeah, that Rolex looks like a vintage piece. So yeah, that's kind of nice to see someone kind of going out on a whim or taking a risk with their watch to get a great shot. So yeah, lovely to see those.
Yeah, the patina on the dial looks good on that Rolex.
It does, well. Yeah, it does look insane. Also, the last one as well, the stone dial looks really cool. Like you mentioned, we've had a couple of watches on our Insta shots, kind of part of our episode, and we've seen lots of lovely dials. But this is another magnificent example with that kind of. I think it's like a disc. Is it Disco Volante style kind of case? And they're really cool strap. So yeah, got some great choices. For me, I went with something slightly different. The first one is a 1980s Audemars Piguet reference 25643BA. And I hadn't actually seen this watch before, so it really, really interested me. It's an ultra slim automatic tourbillon that was produced for 6 years from 1986 to 1989. Produced in that region for 6 years. And I think it was one of the thinnest automatic tourbillons of its time, being 5.3 millimeters thick. And it just looked really unusual and something that I hadn't seen before. And I loved how the shot is kind of in great detail, kind of like a macro style shot. And kind of the picture's kind of taken with the watch in his hands, which looks quite cool to me. So that's one of mine. The second one is kind of like a watch head. And I think we've done that before when we looked at, I think you had like, Tim, you had like a Christmas tree of watch heads, which was really cool and really creative. But this one is probably slightly less complex, but still great nonetheless, from Yeo _GenF. On Instagram, and it's of Universal Genève Polrata Deluxe Automatic, and it just looks stunning. Just the head of the watch, the gold case, the kind of black inner part of the dial, and gold outer shell. So I think it's another great shot and captured very well. How about you, George? What's your thoughts on these Insta shots, and do you have any yourself?
Oh my God, these shots are amazing. So obviously starting off with the Grand Seiko, I can't work out whether it's the Shunbun or the Taisetsu, whether it's like the light pink or the gray. Yeah. It looks like it might be the Shunbun. But that watch is stunning. The Taisetsu is actually on my list of watches I consider to be nigh on perfect, especially with the heat glued hand. So that shot just speaks to me in my soul.
He'll love that watch.
Yeah. Honestly, love that picture. The jade dial Audemars Piguet, that bezel is incredible, just absolutely off the charts.
They don't make them like that anymore, do they? Don't make many watches like they used to, which is
no nowadays. You're getting interesting if you've got a coin edge bezel,
yeah.
But that's like coin edge cubed. It's incredible. And then getting onto your shot, Zach, Polrota. Love it. I can't wait for it to be brought back. Those limited editions with the twisted lugs that Universal Genève released were incredible. I can't wait to see them a modern version of the micro rotor movement as well, which they do. But that Audemars Piguet reference 25643BA, like the ultra slim automatic tourbillon, I've not seen that before either.
No, I've never seen it either.
That's very of the time, but oh my god, it's beautiful. 5.3 millimeters thick. I like it, and I like the asymmetry of it as well.
Sorry, you're allowed. You're allowed. I'll just do gritted teeth. Accept it all. Yeah,
but what I also I love the symmetry of the pole rotor. Actually,
yeah.
Interestingly,
all is forgiven. All is forgiven. Yeah. There's a lot going on this Audemars Piguet. Yeah. But yeah, I do. I like the little bit at the bottom where it's like got APAP. I think that's quite cool. So, well done. Zach, you have to pick.
Yes.
So someone can go for our wonderful timekeeper's bin.
Oh, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. I feel like I've had some great examples. You've had some great examples. And George has done like a nice synopsis on each watch. But if I had to go with any, it might have to be the watch.
Yeah.
Watch.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so congrats to the watch.
Wonderful. Yeah. Small applause.
Yeah.
Small applause. Wonderful. A beer mat is yours if you want one. Yeah. Cool. Brilliant. So that's that bit. Well done. There we go. Now, Zach, you wonderfully brought George sort of to my attention. So he's sort of more your guest than he is mine, but we're becoming friends on this show as we speak, which is fantastic. So why don't you go ahead with the first question, and I'll follow up with the odds numbered, the even numbered questions.
Yeah, for sure. Welcome again, George. Lovely to have you on. So I'll just start off the kind of questions that we have here. So what first sparked your passion for watches, and how or why did you decide to start the Watch Yourself George channel?
Well, my passion for watches started, it started from a young age. I just liked sort of looking in the window of like H. Samuels and stuff at the G-Shocks, the Rotaries, at the Citizens and stuff. But I remember first watch I remember being given, and it was a G-Shock. And I just sort of liked it. I wore it all the time. And then fast forward, well, around the same time, my uncle, who was in the Royal Marines for 27 years, he was thinking about getting a watch to retire. And he mentioned he wanted to get a watch called a Breitling. And I was like, ooh, not heard of that brand before. Let me research it. Bearing in mind, I was about probably 12, 13 at the time. So I started looking into it, and I was like, I didn't know watches could be this expensive. And I just fell down the rabbit hole. He ended up getting a Breitling Avenger 2 Seawolf when he eventually did retire. And I got a watch of the same year, 2015, that he got. Again, an Avenger 2 Seawolf when I turned 21. And I've got the watch just down there, actually, in my watch box. I love it. That's the watch that really started me on my journey. But I started the channel, actually, because I started working in Goldsmiths in Bristol, central Bristol, in start of 2023. My partner at the time pushed me into getting a job in the watch industry, because I was sort of bouncing, not knowing what I wanted to do. And funnily enough, I met Britt Pierce, watch gringer in there. And she inspired me to go to one of my best friends, Terry, who is a filmmaker. He has all the equipment. So I just went, you've got the equipment and the editing know-how. I've got the nerdy obsession. Sit me down and I'll talk about them. You edit it and we go 50-50. And hence Watch Yourself George was born. And for the last 18 months, we've done 2 videos a week, and it's sort of done well.
Wow.
That's incredible.
So, yeah.
And dedication. We do one a month, and even that is like just far too much, right, Zach? It's just so much going on in our lives. So hats off to you for doing that. Yeah.
You plan. We don't.
I plan.
Yeah, that's true.
Zach's cool and wings it, whereas I plan it.
Tim's a good planner. Tim can kind of, I'd probably say, yeah, Tim's a good planner. He comes up with the kind of like general structure and I just come in and try and fill it and try and match the quality. But yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing what you've been doing so far with Terry and like the quality of it. And then just staying on top of like major topics has been really cool. That's a really cool thing that you've got going for sure.
Yeah, we're very proud, especially the brands that we are and have worked with for the size of our channel. We are so proud. We have some cool things coming up as well in the next few months.
Amazing.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
And it's all very natural as well what you do. So I really like that. So hats off to you. You know, doing really well. But you mentioned the Royal Marines. I thought they give a watch. Don't they after a certain amount of years service or when you leave that there are Breitlings handed around, there are other such things. So.
I think that was once upon a time.
Okay.
I think when he left he had about a £200 budget after 27 years to get a gift.
Wow.
And he got a watch winder.
Okay.
To be fair, his watch is a Royal Marines special project.
Wow. Okay, yeah.
So it's Royal Marines special project, Avenger 2 Seawolf Black Dial. Amazing watch, 45 millimeters, water resistant to 3,000 meters. This is a chunky.
Yeah.
And I can attest to that. I was wearing mine the other day as well. Like, it's incredible. But I don't think they give free watches anymore. Oh.
That's a shame. Fight for Queen and Country, they should give you like a Rolex or something, right?
Yeah.
Well, fair play to him for serving King and Country. So well done. To move on to the next question. What's your take on the rise of micro brands and sort of their influence in the watch community? I know you did a video ranking them recently. So we talked about that before you came on. Just talk about that. I'd love to hear your sort of take on it all, really.
Those videos are always very, very contentious. My goal was to not end up on a watch discussion board having people say how terrible it was. So far, haven't seen it anywhere. I did preface it by saying this is my ranking based on what I'd spend my money on, how likely I am to spend my money. So I wasn't trying to put it across as objective. It was inherently subjective. But my take on micro brands is, every brand started off as a micro brand at one point. Every brand started off as a one, two person band. And I think the rise of micro brands is symptomatic of the watch industry finally moving entirely past the quartz crisis. I think the final end bell of the quartz crisis actually came this year at LVMH Watch Week, weirdly, because it's the Serpentine, the Bulgari Serpentine, quintessential jewelry watch that would have been the go-to for quartz movement, is now automatic. I do think the rise of micro brands is very much watchmaking and the watch enthusiast community and all of that is back in a big, big way. And it's obviously been slowly rising since the 70s. But it's just people appreciate watches for what they are now, which is something analog in a digital age. And I think the rise of microbrands just is symptomatic of that appreciation and the fact that we've moved entirely past it. And it's so nice to see, and there's space for all of them. Like in the enthusiast community, no one buys just one watch. They all, like, everyone gets the sales and shares the love. It's lovely.
I was gonna say, do you think it's too saturated? But it sounds like no, there's room for everyone in your lovely world. Addiction world.
I think It has possibly reached the point of saturation. It's like social media or something. There was a time to get in. But I think that time was COVID. Now I think you need to be something exceedingly special to succeed. The end point was COVID, I think. yeah, you really need to be bringing something very different if you want to succeed nowadays. Same with YouTube.
That kind of sounds like Burneron.
Yeah, Burneron.
Yeah, that's someone who's come up with something exceptional. That's kind of like, you know, I guess
if it's one watch done so many different ways, but yeah, absolutely incredible. For me, it's like the perfect. It's perfect watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Mirage is
phenomenal.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. Yeah.
It's, and weirdly, it's so artistic. Yeah, it's entirely engineering led.
Mm-hmm.
It's just incredible. It's shaped that way because that's the shape of the movement.
Yeah.
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 I listened to an interview. I can't remember who managed to get him on, but it was like, you know, it's like an hour and a half or something. And it's just incredible. Like his story, his journey to get there. And we talked about it on a different pod, didn't we? Different episode, yeah. Zach. But it's a fifth of the price of a crash, even though it's still rather expensive. So, which we go back and say it's value for money.
That's true. I think I have the next question as well. Actually,
you do. Yeah.
So what would you say is your ultimate grail watch? I know that's a very hard question for a watch person, but your ultimate grail watch. And why does it hold that status for you, George?
I think, like most watch people, that answer will change every day.
Yeah.
But I think I'm actually going to give the same answer that I gave, and the same answer I usually give. And I think it's the same answer I gave to Rachel Felber.
Oh, yeah.
In when we spoke to the New York Times.
Yeah.
And that is the A. Lange & Söhne Odysseus chronograph.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
For me, that watch is... It's pretty much perfect. I believe it's titanium. Mm-hmm. The crown guards are exceptional. The crown guards... Well, it's the chronograph pushers disguised to look like the crown guards. I just love it. The bracelet is beautiful. The movement is stunning and otherworldly, and it's just got everything that you need in a watch. It's got day and a chronograph.
Yeah, that sounds like an amazing choice, to be honest. It kind of like nails everything from design to the mechanism to materials. Yeah, definitely nailed it. That's a great choice, George.
I'm not a big on gold personally. There's a lot of gold watches I do love, but I'm a very simple person, both in taste and mind.
we had David from the CEO of the Strap Tailor on again when we first started doing this, and he went for a similar watch, didn't he, Zach? Yeah, so yeah, good taste in good company there. And if you haven't checked out the Strap Tailor, it's a great brand. I think, you know, with my new reversal, I think I might have to go and reach out for a strap to him, custom made or something. So perhaps the ostrich leather he was going on about. So sounds really, really good. Cool. I've got the next question. So how did you basically start off making a YouTube channel sort of dedicated to watches? You know, sort of what were the biggest challenges of growing the brand? You must have had that eureka moment, started somewhere and then just went, right, I'm just going to do it. But how did you get there?
So we started making videos during the craze, the Barbenheimer craze. Barbie and Oppenheimer. And our first video was, we're going to make a video on the watches that appear in both Barbie and Oppenheimer. As I said, I bought the nerdy obsession. He bought the camera skill and equipment and everything. And we just started off and sat down in my living room and pressed record. I made some notes. I don't do that anymore. I wing it far more now. And I think the content is somehow the better for it. But yeah, I mean, we just kept making videos and people kept watching. And as time went on, more and more people watched. When we started, we were getting 100 to 200 views. We were floored by that. We were expecting 5. or something. But it just never happened like that. And now it's rare that we put up a video and get fewer than 2,000-3,000, which for us is like, we'll always have stinkers. One of our recent videos got about 700 and we were like, oh, that's a shame. Or 400 for our recent call-in review, the Scottish-based micro-brand owned by Anne Aldain. But it's a nice watch. We had fun making the video. Nice to review. But yeah, we just kept making videos and eventually brands started reaching out. Christopher Ward was the first brand that reached out. And eventually we started having projects with either by us reaching out, me making the effort, or the brand reaching out to us. Studio Underdog, we're currently working on a review with Bell and Ross, we're in conversations with as well. Had that conversation yesterday. Nomos, you know about.
Oh, nice. Love Nomos, yeah.
Yeah. So we just kept working and things kept happening.
Yeah. So did you have just, did you go, I'm going to make one video? Or did you go, I've got three in the back of my mind? Like, you know.
Oh, we made an A4 sheet.
Okay, yeah.
Of video ideas. And 90% of them are still untouched because in the end, I think the first news video we made was the Tudor Pelagos FXD Black, the US Navy.
Yeah, one. Nice.
And up to that point, we were getting 100-200 views a video. We put that video out, 400-500 people watched it, and we were like, news.
Yes.
We had great fun making it. We had more fun making that than the other content because we could just sit down and react to stuff. It was it was easy, it was fun. And then we just went, we really enjoyed that. We'll keep doing that, but we also really enjoy reviews. So any watches we can get our hands on, we'll make a video about it, get some nice footage of it. Because we only cover stuff that we enjoy. The intention was always to keep making videos. And I'm surprised it didn't fizzle out. And now we're more passionate about it today. And we enjoy it more today than we ever have. Like that just keeps, that just keeps growing. But yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. And what about the biggest challenge of growing a brand then? Is it going out to people? We talk about it sort of offline that actually people have come to you, so it's not always chase, chase, chase on your side. So that's good, right? But what about the biggest challenge?
There's a few challenges. One is motivation. I don't know how people do it by themselves. I don't know how these creators have sat down in front of a camera, recorded themselves, come up with ideas, and then edited it and uploaded it all themselves and kept themselves motivated. Me and Terry motivate each other. It's like having a gym buddy. I've tried to do YouTube by myself before in like gaming and stuff when I was younger. Couldn't do it. It's the motivation's the biggest part, but also there's, I think less so in the watch world, but there's still detractors. There's still negative comments. There was one YouTuber recently, he put up a video about the it was a 24 YouTubers that had made a watch brand tier list of 2024. It was Nico, Leonard, Watch Gringer, so Britt Pierce, and Adrian Barker, and myself. Amazing content, amazing company to be in.
Yeah, exactly,
given that
yeah.
they're all on like 300,000 subscribers to a million, and I'm there on at the time like 2,500. But the entire video was so personal. He just spent the time telling people I smell or I look like a tool or all of these things, and I was like, why?
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's why we sort of set this stuff up. There's so much hate, like fanboyage, just like just dragging people down. And we just want to talk about watches that we absolutely love. Yeah. You know, we don't have loads of money. We don't have loads of contacts. We're not journalists. This is just what we love. You know, I like Symmetry. You don't like Symmetry, but we're not falling out over it, right? Because it's just watches. And we just want to talk to people about why they love watches and why we like them. And if they want to talk back, that's great. But there's so much negativity. You're absolutely right. Yeah, sorry I have to go through that, mate. But you're smashing it in other places, right? You're doing really well. So hats off to you.
It was just, he tried to tell his audience that I knew nothing about watches and what I was talking about. And I was like, well, that's not true. I'm not an expert, but I know some stuff. Come on, mate. Be a bit genuine. Yeah. And it did get to me for probably a couple of days, but like, I've got nothing against the guy. Mm. He has fun. And as long as he stays in his lane, I'd never want to mention his name in public. Yeah.
It's one of those, I think it's what Tim said is right. Like, you know, it's brave of you to continue making videos, but then also I think like bad publicity is still publicity. So in the end, if if his name is in if your name is in his mouth, then that only brings you more listeners, more viewers anyway. So it's kind of part and parcel, unfortunately, of like this kind of game of creating content, which you probably know that too. So I'm glad it didn't kind of like get you down for too long as well. And plus, that probably just he's probably just thinking of ways to make content. He's like, boom, here, this is it. Unfortunately, that's his kind of like limited way of thinking. What can I talk about today to get some views? So, yeah, that kind of
stuff. Yeah, I actually managed to get myself sacked from the first AD I worked in. Well, I didn't get myself sacked. I ended up resigning because I made a YouTube video talking about Rolex, and I was very not complimentary about the Yachtmaster 2. very silly on my part, but no one likes the Yachtmaster 2, so...
I wouldn't have lasted a minute if I had to talk about the Rolex, but there you go. Yeah. But bring it back to love, though. I'm a Man United fan, and I live rent-free in lots of people's heads because loads of people hate Man United, but they still love them. So, you know, love hated, you know, but never ignored, that kind of thing. So, yeah. There we go. Cool. So you got the next question,
right? The next one, so I'll go ahead. Is there a growing young demographic that watch your show or watch your YouTube videos? And I'm also keen to understand who consumes the show behind the numbers. So in terms of your demographic of people, what does that kind of look like?
So I can actually look at our demographics whilst we're chatting, actually, if that's useful. So it's actually interesting. When I look at our demographics, particularly over the last 28 days, for example, as you'd expect, 97.5% male. I'm surprised 2.5% female, to be honest. that shocks me. But what does shock me is, well, when I go to meetups, a lot of the people are older, much older. But in terms of our demographics on our channel, 30% is 25 to 34 years old. Which does surprise me. For example, I know for a fact when Rachel was looking for people in their 20s to write her article about for the New York Times, she was struggling to find watch collectors in their 20s, which is why she actually asked the British Watch and Clockmakers Alliance, who then went to Christopher Ward, to ask them to put people forward. And then they came to me. But it shows that there's people out there. There's so many of us in this age bracket out there. And that is really interesting to me. Because even when I speak to anyone who's not in this world, they have a preconceived notion of it being older gentlemen, old farts who've got lots of money who just like to pop down the AD and splash the cash and stuff. But yeah, it's really interesting looking at the demographics. And actually, I've never had a proper look at them, would you believe, before now. So it's really, really...
I find it fascinating just to know, like, especially where they are as well. Like, we look at ours, you know, a lot of them US, Australia, that kind of thing, as well as Europe and the UK. But you just never know who's watching your show. So,
I mean, our third biggest country is India.
Wow.
In the last 28 days, our third biggest country is India, which, looking at it, is very, very surprising. In the last year, it's United States, United Kingdom, Canada. But in the last year, our biggest demographic is 25 to 34-year-olds.
Yeah. I'm very gracious. You think I fit in that category. I do just fall out of that category. Very, very kind of you to say us.
I was sure that you fit into that category.
They wouldn't have known.
No, I know. I know. I can't live a lie there, can I? I can't live a lie. Time catches up with us all. And it was fascinating when we had Charles Turl on, who's from Lion and Turnbull, and he's obviously the auctioneer there. And he's, I think he's doing another one soon for Just Cartier. So yeah, definitely check that one out. But he was saying, you know, because I asked a similar question about, you know, who goes to watch auctions. I always think it's like a man in tweed, you know, double-breasted suit, that kind of thing. And he said it's a lot of young wealthy people, you know, perhaps from India or from China as well, Hong Kong, you know. So it isn't just, like you said, old farts like me, but falling into that old fart category. But yeah, it's good to have younger people into watches. So yeah, cool. Have I got, I think, the next question, right? Do I? What have we? So we've got young demographic. Oh yeah. So what direction do you sort of see sort of watch social media going in 2025 and beyond? You know, good and bad. Yeah, just perhaps a good and a bad.
So watch social media, it's growing. There's no question about it that the amount of influencers in the space is definitely growing at quite a pace, actually. Same with micro brands. And it has sort of reached the inflection point where you sort of need to be through the door already, unless you're bringing something special, which fortunately I like to think we are, and I like to think you are as well. So.
Yeah, just about, yeah.
Going forwards, though, I think it's going to be interesting because the space in a social media context is maturing to the point where you're going to see these influencers turn maybe into more traditional influencers and start expanding out of their niches, trying to do different other things. Whether that's good or bad, you saw it with gaming YouTube. Like, take KSI, for example. He did a book, then he got into boxing, music, all of these things. And I think any influencer that is around for long enough does get itchy feet, and they will end up starting to expand out. So I think in terms of the actual normal influencers in the space, they are going to change it up. They're not going to keep it the same forever. I know we wouldn't want to keep it the same forever. We want to end up doing more new, exciting things. I know Britt Pearce, for example, keep mentioning her, but she's my reason for being in this space. She wants to make a website. She wants to do merch. So two fairly standard things. So she wants her own watch blog, but they're still symptoms of expanding out. And I think one of the biggest things that's negative that could happen is you see it as more money enters the space, that some morals and ethics could end up going out of the window as the space becomes more diluted by people who aren't maybe in it for the love of watches and to share it, but more in it for the money. And maybe some influencers will get swayed by that. They'll end up doing a lot of paid for reviews that I have strong feelings on. I think you should do a product showcase if it's reviewed. If it's paid for, you shouldn't be, money shouldn't be changing hands for a review.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
But I think if the amount of money in the luxury watch space keeps growing, you're going to see some questionable ethics more so than already start entering the social media side, and it's going to start getting murky.
That's a fascinating point. When you said about like other influencers, again, you know, wrestling has come to Netflix, and we talked about it before, didn't we? And Logan Paul is now suddenly a wrestler, but I didn't even know who he was. I saw him as a wrestler first, and then I was like, there's this drink called Prime. Again, I'm an old fart, right? No idea what it is. It's all over the ring, you know, and then seeing how much it's sold for. But he's, you know, he's into watches as well. So yeah, it's you get other people from other spaces sort of going into watches, and it's not just you, Roger Federer's of this world, you know, doing Rolex for Wimbledon or whatever. Yeah.
His were both stolen.
Really? What? Logan Paul's.
He had a Nautilus and an AP chronograph, White Dial, that he tried to take through TSA, so airport security. Apparently they both disappeared from his bag.
I heard about that, actually. Wow. Yeah, that's no surprise, though.
$300,000
That's insane. I bet he doesn't even...
It's a few prime bottles, right?
Yeah, that's true. I bet he doesn't even feel it. Yeah, it's probably a couple of prime bottles. Yeah. Those guys are like loaded. But a shame nonetheless, I guess.
Yeah, it's a shame. It would make me gulp, $300,000.
Yeah, maybe more than gulp. I don't think it's the end.
Think if I lost any watch.
Yeah. Well, that's a three-bed house where I live.
That's insane.
Obviously not in London.
Yeah, definitely not, man. Maybe like a box. Well, not even a box, a few boxes. So I think I'm on to the next question. Do you think watch brands embrace social media effectively? Or if so, which ones and why?
I think there's certain brands that most certainly do. And I think some of the best examples are likely to be some of the sort of mid-sized, some of the mid-sized micro brands.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I think one of the best launches I saw recently was it was the H-Moser Studio Underdog
collaboration
on the passion fruit, and they just teased it in both of their social media channels, just sort of hinting at it. And a lot of the traditional brands, take Omega, they'll release a watch and they'll just throw up some pictures of it.
I think traditional watch brands are terrible. Yeah. They get someone, we talk about Roger Federer, love him as tennis player and everything, but they just go, right, him, we'll give him £40 million whatever to do it, and we'll give him all these watches, and it's not creative, and I just think they need to learn from, again, younger people, that demographic of actually how to use social media, teasing things. David Beckham as well, again, love him as a footballer, but with Tudor, I just find it very strange how they do that. They just go for like really famous stars and just think that's enough. But yeah,
I will amend my point on Omega slightly, because they have utilized social media and traditional media fairly well recently in teasing watch releases on Daniel Craig's wrist. So they've used the power of social media to create hype. But in terms of their actual social media marketing past that, it's pretty awful. Yeah. Same with Rolex. All they do is every so often put up a picture of a watch that everyone already knew existed, or a post about a Paraflex hairspring or something. And I'm like, okay, cool. Where's the interest or engagement here? Whereas you look at some like Fears in Bristol. I had the pleasure of working with Fears. It's two people working in their marketing department. Mm. And yet they create better, more engaging content. They do lives to actually interact with their audience. Yeah. These larger, more traditional companies in the watch space are just missing out.
Yeah. You mentioned Omega, and again, Zach and I both love them, they're our favourite brand. But it's not even Bond in his prime. Daniel Craig, I don't want to slag him off, obviously, love him to death, but he's looking a bit hobo-ish now, right? And he's got the nice watch on, and it's like, mate, get a haircut, and like wear the Bond suit, right? And have the Rolex or have the Omega, whatever, be Bond. So even then, I don't think it's like the best, like, I suppose, person to put it on.
He's in his art critic stage.
Yeah, exactly.
He's looking very Benoit Blanc.
Yeah.
Now from like.
But is that very Omega? I don't know. Probably isn't. So
I think Daniel Craig is just being Daniel Craig now.
Hmm.
I see him
as in my mind young Layer Cake. That's a great movie.
Great movie, yeah.
And obviously Bond. Yeah. Chiseled, not like I said, hobo-ish.
But the news came out today that Longines now have a new brand ambassador.
And yes.
and it is Henry Cavill.
Ooh. Yes.
So can we all respect Longines for their immaculate taste?
Yeah. No, exactly. My wife absolutely adores him. So I'm obviously number two, but Henry Cavill is number one, and I have to accept that with good grace.
I love Henry Cavill.
He's an orderly queue, though, right?
Yeah, he is. Him and, weirdly, Ewan McGregor, those are the two men that I'd consider changing teams for.
But Ewan McGregor, he's tied in with the brand, right? Isn't he? Yeah, when he was like really famous, I thought there were some watches he was tied up in. We'll have to dig that out and flash some images up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, have I got the next one, Zach? We're a few more from the end, aren't we, for the interview? Oh, yeah. So how has YouTube and Instagram sort of shaped your journey as a watch enthusiast and sort of the broader watch community? Just any sort of comments on that one that you have?
YouTube has 100% shaped my journey as a watch enthusiast. One of the first big events I remember as I fell really deeply into this hole was watching on the big TV. On the big TV downstairs, and it was actually Watchfinder's original video on the blue Bel Canto.
Yeah.
So it was when it was still Talking Hands, Andrew Morgan, on the blue Bel Canto, and so I haven't been in this space in a deep sense for very, very long. I'm just obsessive, and so YouTube has been my medium for finding new brands. I didn't know about Christopher Wood before that video release, and now it's the brand I work most closely with. Life comes at you fast. And Instagram has shaped my watch journey in a huge sense, because that is the main medium where I connect with people, with brands. For me, it's essentially a watch LinkedIn. You see an influencer, you follow them, they follow you back, you have a chat, or same with a brand. And it's just become an invaluable resource, which So YouTube for knowledge and content, Instagram for those connections, absolutely.
Yeah, because you get a lot of comments, which I absolutely love, and I read the comments just as much as I watch your videos. And it's fascinating, you get that engagement, you know, and you engage back. It's not just someone puts a comment on and they just ignore them, you know, like these people are beneath me or whatever. You really embrace them and build that conversation as well. So, I like that.
It takes a lot of time. Sometimes I don't have the headspace, and I always feel really guilty that I sometimes don't get to comments until 5 or 6 days after, just because I don't have the motivation to reply, and that's honest. But unless I get hundreds of comments on a video, so I can't feasibly reply, I always think this person has taken the time to write something.
Absolutely.
Even if it's just a couple words like thank you or totally agree with you, or that's a contentious comment if they're saying something negative. I just want to take the time and show them that their time is respected. Thanks for watching. Thanks for commenting.
Very, very good. Very honourable. Yeah, good stuff.
I think I have the next question as well. So what's one underrated watch or brand that deserves more recognition? I know you probably have a good one lined up for that, potentially.
I'll tell you what. I've been racking my brain, and it's really hard to think of one. Because in my mind, there's three types of brands, really, that are popular. There's the brand that has broad market appeal, because the watch market is two segments. It's the 5% of enthusiasts and the 95% of the regular non-obsessive people. There's brands that will appeal to the 95%. There's brands that will appeal to the 5%. And then there's brands which will, of course, appeal to both. In the case of Bremont's rebrand, there's brands that will also appeal to no one. For me, I think the brand that most deserves to break out of the 5% is probably Grand Seiko. And Grand Seiko, they've got work to do. They do have work to do. They need to work on the comfort of their bracelets, for example. They need to introduce a decent micro-adjust. But artistically and build quality-wise and finishing-wise, especially for the price, Grand Seiko deserves all of the success. If you take it watch head by watch head, remove the bracelet, which unfortunately it comes as a full package, Grand Seiko is one of the best out there.
Yeah, we went to the London store, didn't we, Zach? And we were really impressed, both with the hospitality, but also, you know, I hadn't really rated Grand Seiko as a watch brand forever. I'm just going to be honest, right? And I was blown away by not just the images we saw before we went, but actually looking at the dials up close and trying them on. Some of them have got a bit pricier, yeah. But, you know, they've got one for like every season, but it's not just four seasons in Japan, right? It's like 20. Yeah. So, yeah, it's really good. It's really, really good.
Kind of like an expensive.
As I said,
expensive loophole to go down, isn't it? Getting every season of watch. But yeah, that's, I think it's definitely a great shout of Grand Seiko. And we were met by, I think there was like a sales assistant, Sam, and she was super cool and super welcoming. And I think that just added to the experience. But yeah, they have a lot of great pieces. And I definitely feel like they are, you know, I kind of feel like they have like a bit of a quiet confidence. Like they know they build incredible watches, but I don't know, maybe might I say on the marketing side, if, I don't know if that's communicated more to the masses, or if it's just a thing where people who are into watches check out Grand Seiko and like, whoa, these are incredible, and get into them. But yeah, bit of a ramble there, but yeah, great choice.
And I want to do an honourable mention as well, if I may.
I do, please. Breguet, yeah,
Breguet. I think, especially on the aftermarket, they have some absolute steals. And they do not, I think they're underutilized by the Swatch Group.
Mm-hmm.
But I think because of that, you can pick some up on the aftermarket. Some absolutely horology, beautiful, like traditional rose engine guilloche pieces for sub 10 grand. Wow. Solid gold cases. Like, yeah, I think Breguet, obviously, they have. If you like history in your watches, Abraham Louis Breguet is the name. So Breguet's got to be my honourable mention.
Right, it's a good choice because we had Ji Wang, he's this great artist on, not last episode before, you know, wonderful watch artist, and she loves Breguet as well, doesn't she? And she's done recently. If you check out her. Her Instagram, she's done some really good drawings recently of the mechanisms, as well as obviously, you know, the cases and the dials and everything. So yeah, just another shout out to her. But no, very good choice. I think I've got the penultimate question, I think. So what advice would you give to someone starting their watch collection today? One piece of advice.
I think...
Don't do it.
Yeah, that's an excellent one. Yeah. Spend your money on something like Warhammer or something. It'll be a lot cheaper.
Yeah. Or comic books. We talk about that as well, won't we?
It'll still be cheaper. But I think, honestly, the best piece of advice I could give, and it's so cliche, but the mistake everyone gets is they buy watches for other people.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that as in they gift them. I mean, they wear them hoping it'll help them pick up the ladies, or other men will comment on them or something like that. And honestly, and I've said it since we first started the channel, if you buy what you love, you'll never be disappointed. And I've always said it regarding like investment pieces and stuff. I don't believe, obviously there's a place for buying watches as investments, but you could lose money. It's an investment. But if you buy a watch that you love, that may have investment value.
Yeah.
You'll never be disappointed. I got my Breitling purchased for me as my 21st birthday present in... when was it? I turned 21, so it must have been 5 years ago. 2019.
Yeah.
That's it. I got that bought for me. and my tastes have changed since. I prefer smaller pieces as opposed to a 45-piece monster now. But I loved it at the time. It's got that sentimental value, and I will never part with it. And I still love it, and I still wear it because I loved it at the time, and I picked it because I loved it, and I will never be disappointed with it. My taste could change to 31mm watches somehow, and I still wouldn't part with it because I followed that piece of advice in my mind. I bought it for me.
Awesome.
That's good, top notch. I would have probably said something very similar. So yeah, good stuff. So I think you're going to do one more, haven't we? And then we're going to do our deep dive into Baltic. Yeah. So floor is yours. Last one.
So where do you see the watch industry heading in the next few years? I know that's quite like a vague and a vague question, but do you have any kind of points of that or any idea?
One direction. Yeah, one direction. Do you think?
One direction.
One direction. It's really interesting because we've seen the rise of vintage reissues. I can imagine vintage reissues becoming larger and brands doing them a little bit more. Unfortunately, I think brands are tending to do some of the more interesting vintage reissues as limited editions. Which is a real shame. But in all honesty, in the next few years, the thing I'm most excited for is the rebirth of Universal Genève, which is going to be really exciting for the watch enthusiast community. And I think hopefully that should demonstrate in very real terms a love for vintage. And not just vintage style, but vintage, in many ways, vintage proportion as well.
Yeah.
Because that's something a lot of brands get wrong. They do vintage style, not vintage proportion. And it's something that the Black Bay 54 did very, very right. So that's where I'd like to see the industry go. And again, I think micro brands will continue to eat into the market share of some of the lower hanging fruit within the traditional watch industry. For example, I can see brands like, who is it? They do lots of ceramic watches. They're part of the Swatch group. Rado. I can see brands like Rado being sort of really struggling because that price segment is being eaten into in a very, very attractive way by micro brands.
Yeah, just going back to the UG thing. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it as well, but hopefully the prices are sensible because they're probably not going to be right and therefore it won't be for everyone. The Tri-Compax is one of my favorite like watches of all time. It's a grail watch of mine. But you know, it's already expensive to buy the original, but if they slap even more of a price tag on it, it's just going to be just out of the reach of so many people.
I can imagine them sitting between, they're in their traditional price bracket between Rolex and Patek Philippe. I can imagine they'll be 10 to 20.
Wow. Oh, no. I thought it would be more Breitling, right? It's not going to be like that.
For me, Breitling doesn't have the dress watches, so Universal Genève is going to be, other than the Premier, but that's a chronograph chunky dress watch. That's not a true dress watch. No. So for me, Universal Genève has got to be their carrier for their dress watches.
Yeah.
For the traditional three-handers.
Yeah, I do like that. I do like the vintage Premier, though. I do like that. Yeah. Cool. So that brings to the end of the interview. Thank you so much. We always have it in the middle and we could all talk for hours, but really love talking to you. It's been fantastic to sort of get your insights. But to Baltic now. So we're not going to go through every single one, but we will pick some of our favorites, and I might as well just go right into it. Zach, and the Prismic. So I have one of the Stonedale versions. I've got it in the lapis blue, and I mentioned earlier, I mean,
I wish I got the jade one. Not as in over it, but I wish I got two of them and got the jade one. There is a gentleman on Instagram, I think, that's got all three. And I think he does live in London. So if he's listening or we can reach out to him, I'd love to see those ones in person. But I think you like the other one, don't you? The agate dial, don't you, Zach? But that's all orange. It's a beautiful colour. But yeah, I don't know what you think about the Prismic more broadly.
Yeah, definitely. Baltic's been an interesting one because I feel like it's a brand that I've been into quite recently. So it's an interesting one to kind of look into and to speak about. I love the Prismic model. I love the minimalistic sort of designs. I also like that they come in many different color variations as well, so suited to most tastes. I also, we spoke about different size watches, so I definitely like, I'm not sure if I've mentioned to you, George, Tim definitely knows, because I think maybe he's on the similar lines, like smaller style watches, more of the classic 36 millimeter. So I love that it comes in that kind of size. And looking at the bracelet, it looks super, super comfortable. And yeah, I think I saw Tim's limited. I think it might be the Paris edition. Correct me if I'm wrong.
It is. Yeah. The lapis blue. Yeah. With the mesh bracelets. I do like a good mesh
bracelet. Exactly. And I think he wore it when we went to visit Grand Seiko and Bond Street. And I think it just looks unreal. It looked insane and had me thinking.
In the light.
Yeah. It just looks insane in person in the light. And if I had seen it in time, maybe I would have been trying to get some money together to try and get one. So yeah, great.
Yeah, well, as I said, I miss picking up my son because it was on French time and it was the time I had to do the school pickup and I was late because I was literally like, bye, do it now. And the payment didn't go through at first, so I had to do the payment twice. And I was like, shit. But I was able to get that, so I was quite happy. But George, just before we bring you in, you did, like say, you did an episode where you sort of ranked all the micro brands. And I think I'm going to steal your thunder a bit. You went with Meh, didn't you? So I don't know whether you're going to change the Meh or you're going to keep the Meh, but... Yeah. What do you think of the first watch? See if it improves over time.
So it was the middle of...
The middle meh.
Yeah, it was the middle of five tiers. And my ranking was based on what I personally would want to spend my money on. So it was inherently subjective because I didn't want to pretend like a tier list can be in any way objective. Yeah. They're inherently subjective. Wanted to fully lean into it.
Yeah.
And I stand by it. I think the new Hermetique Jewel Time is disgusting.
But bulbs.
Yeah. A flush crown at 3 o'clock and a flush crown at 9 o'clock. It looks like the watch has ears.
I'm going to look this up now while you're talking because I didn't pick that one for our list, but hang on, let's have a look. There is a lot going on. There's a lot going on.
To me, it's just grim. However, having said that, I've actually done two reviews with Baltic. I've worked with them on two reviews, and we reviewed the MR Roulette in Salmon our first one. Mm-hmm. First of all, Zach, great size, 36 millimeter, love it. That's why I'm wearing this. Yeah. Fully with you there. Absolutely love it. Micro rotor movement on a 500 euro watch. Sign me up. Absolutely excellent. Even the finishing felt really good. I think the build quality on the bracelet could have been a little bit better, but you're still getting a milled clasp, which you don't get with Seikos or in that price bracket. You still don't even get in some of the F1 range, in the 1 to 2 grand range with Tag. So you can't moan about that if you're getting a milled clasp. But for me, I just wish they had options for sapphire crystal.
Yeah, you said on your show.
Yeah. I just, sapphire crystal, I need it. I want to be able to knock my watch around without having to worry.
Yeah. I mean, they are dabbling a lot of things, like the stone dial. So I think they'll dabble some more. So you might get your wish, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully so. Hope so. Cool. We'll pivot to the Aquascape now. And I'm really drawn to it. So I think it's a punchy take on a Submariner, you know, Black Bay 58, or just Black Bay, and even the Seamaster. You know, I love the simple, sort of uncomplicated, you know, sort of design, really. You've got a bit of a dash of Fotina on some of them and the gilt on others, and it goes a really long way. The one I particularly like, and will flash up on screen, is sort of the, you know, the sunburst blue dial. It's really clean, impressive, and it's like being sort of, you know, deep sea underwater, right? And I've said previously, I love my video games. I love BioShock. It's kind of like that, going back to Rapture, going to the underwater world. I think that's really cool. The black sort of dial's more matte. It's classic look, great heritage nod, but it's got the lollipop second hand, which listeners know is my absolute favourite. There's a white dial version too. I think that's pretty neat. And for pound, I do think they give the established brands sort of a run for their money, really. Zach, George, which do you like? You know, Zach, you go first. What do you think about that make and model?
Yeah, definitely. I love the kind of vintage-esque sort of design language. Makes them look very classic. And like, as you mentioned, the lollipop hands, which is kind of a great addition. They kind of remind me of like a vintage Montblanc watches. But it must be something to do with the case, or kind of like the black kind of outline on the case. The strap material isn't my favorite, but I do, as I was having a look, as you mentioned it, I do like the classic SB01 model. That kind of gives me a vintage ice blue yacht master kind of feel. The price point does seem very fair for a turn and what you kind of get when it comes to design. But I'm not too sure though. What's your thoughts, George?
So yeah, the Aquascaf Classic in black cream. I know a lot of people don't like Fotina, especially a lot of my viewers actually aren't keen on Fotina. They railed against the recent Pelagos FXD GMT.
No, I like that as well. Someone's got to like it, just me.
I liked it as well. I don't mind Fotina, and I feel like the Aquascaf Classic is sort of the perfect vessel for it.
Yeah.
With it, it looks like the indices are recessed into the dial in sort of a Seamaster heritage type of
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely, which I really love. I've got that watch. Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, as you said, with the lollipop, or although it's more pill shaped second hand, actually.
Yeah.
Really nice, lots of nice vintage throwbacks, and they held off on giving it crown guards as well.
Yeah,
in a very, again, another vintage throwback, because they didn't used to have crown guards. So yeah, really nice. I actually do quite like that.
Yeah, I'm really drawn to it. I may even buy one at some point. I do really like it. Okay, cool. So we'll pivot to the next one. So the Bicompacts, I really like this. And there's actually a watch Instagram photographer who I absolutely love and adore. He's got a bunch of Baltics. So we're going to give him a shout out. And I think we've had him not on the show, but we've mentioned him on the show before. And it's called The Other Side of Art. So shout out to him. He does great things with sort of shadow and light, shows off the dial and textures of the Baltics, you know, which I think sort of, you know, are only the preserve of almost sort of leading luxury brands. He's got a Bicompacts 01, and his shots are incredible. I've put it in the chat for us guys, and I'm going to flash it up as well on screen when we do the edit. I just think his shots are incredible. And sort of the quality of the craftsmanship for me sort of stand out again. You know, just keeping with the one that he's done, you know, it's got a deep blue dial, contrasting with the Azores finishing, and that's sort of the multiple concentric circles they have on the subdials, you know, the 2 second subdials they've got. Again, throwing a hell of more gilt styling and finish off with this sort of firm traditional pushers. I think it's a sleek looking watch, and you know, I really like it. I think they played around with a few sort of iterations as well in different ways. You know, George, you mentioned a salmon on another model. They've got salmon there and a silver that I particularly like. They've paired it with sort of blue steeled hands with blue indices. I think it's really cool. And also, I think the dial itself is sort of composed of, sort of two finishes. There's like a brushed sort of outer dial on some of them, and I think is it sandblasted matte finish on sort of the inside. So it's sort of neat, but also like a fresh juxtaposition. So I'm really tempted by that watch, as well as Other Side of Art's wonderful shots as well. But Zach first, and then and George, gents, what do you think about that? Tempted? Because I certainly am.
Yeah, definitely. I think the Other Side of Art is a wizard when it comes to shots. I see you right there whilst I was having a look. I love the little reflections on like the glass, as well as the shadows. I feel like that does quite well. The contrast between the two helps to capture the true beauty of this watch. I love the vintage style chronographs. The Biocompacts captures, I feel like, that design language effortlessly. It also is quite an elegantly proportioned watch, in my opinion. Although it's a 38mm in case size, it still works, as it also has quite a slim profile. The only downside for me is perhaps the movement, but I suppose any issues like that can be kind of ironed out with any sort of routine service. Reliability of the movement, but I kind of feel like, as I mentioned, that's something that can be, I'm pretty sure, sorted out with just having frequent services. But yeah, what's your thought on that, on the Biocompact, George?
So something I'm a big fan of, open case backs. I'm so glad they offer it on the Biocompacts, because you mentioned the movement being a seagull. It's the same movement as a brand like Studio Underdog uses on the O1 series, or even Gakota uses on their manual wine chronographs. It's actually quite a good movement. It is quite reliable, and I'm glad that we can see it, because it's not the most highly finished movement in the world, but it's still very pretty. I think it's a lot prettier than the movement on the Speedmaster Meteorite that we were looking at earlier, because that's just polished backplate and a little bit of escapement. Whereas the blue gilt is gorgeous. I think that is my favorite there. Again, I feel let down by the high domed Hess light, especially because it's such a high dome. It's easier to knock against things. But it's a nice watch, and the difference in finishing across the dial between the sub dials, between the hour track, the minute track, and the middle of the dial does look nice. I just wish that they held off on doing the crosshairs on everything. Because I think the addition of the crosshairs in the middle of the dial and on the left hand sub dial just adds a bit of busyness that was unneeded.
I like how unbusy a lot of the dials are, but this one, you're right, it's starting to get a bit busier. But they're like 01, 02, 03, maybe 04, like I said, you'll get your sapphire that you want. So exactly. Fingers crossed. So we've done Biocompacts. We'll do Tricompacts. So when I hear that name, and I've already said it already on this pod, I think Universal Genève and the iconic Tricompacts. Love that watch. Want to get it at some point, because only going to get pricier, right? But I'm really enjoying Baltic's design here. It's setting its stall out with like the panda and the reverse panda colorway as a sort of a statement of intent. And I like that. That's bold. But sort of, you know, taking a step back from all the models across the range, I think this is, for me, sort of how crisp all the dials are, and the Tricompacts is sort of no exception. Taking the reverse panda, I'm enjoying the white sort of outer minute marker ring, and it's sort of like, you know, busying up to the black bezel. And I like how nicely the jet black sort of main center dial is sort of the showstopper, but it's got sort of the creamy white sub dials in there, and it's got these shapely black hands that I'm really, really drawn to. I really like that. And also I do like a good numeric font, and I think the choice they've got there goes well, because some of them, they just pick hideous fonts. So I think they've done really well on the font there. There must be other font lovers of watches as well. It can't just be me. And I think the only downside on my mind is the loom offering. I've seen an image where, they've put it in the dark and put the loom on. Basically, why bother unless you're really going to sort of blow it up? Zach, which version do you prefer, and say for George, and what do you like about them? Do you share my love of them as well?
Yeah, definitely. So with the Tricompacts, I know that George kind of mentioned with the Biocompacts that the movement was reliable. But I'd say with the Tricompacts, I prefer the movement a bit more, just because it's a manual wind Swiss movement. And I believe it's a Sellita SW510-M movement, which I feel like is a bit better than the previous movement in the Biocompacts. I'm a big fan of the 1960s kind of inspired racing chronograph aesthetic. Again, Tim, you don't really like Rolex, but love the Daytona. I do prefer, out of these two versions, I do prefer the inverted panda, like you mentioned, with the majority black dial, as it just looks a bit better in my eyes. The price point is slightly higher, but that's only fair when you take into account the upgraded movement and then design that comes with the watch. I love its the feature of the manual wind as well. Some might find it a bit tiresome having to wind your watch, but I think that just adds a little nice quirk for me. What's your thoughts on that, George?
I agree on that. I prefer the reverse panda, the majority black dial. Weird for me. I usually go traditional panda, but I think the white second track really sets off the black dial, so I prefer it. It's interesting that you mentioned the movement being the Sellita SW510. It's a really nice movement. It's a good movement, and I actually have a watch here that has that movement, and it brings me on to another point. They let you see the seagull, but they don't offer an open case back on this model. Let me be honest, the SW510 is a nice looking movement.
Nice. Yeah.
And this is a Studio Underdog 03 series. Wow. This is a bicompax, and it's a mono pusher chronograph. But I know for a fact it's an SW510M. So I don't know why this is an SW510M with tricompax. And two pusher chronograph, but it's a nice looking movement, and it's a shame that they're hiding it because they do like to show off their movements. Yeah. I mentioned the MR Roulette and the MR Classic earlier. They let you see the micro rotor in that. They let you see the seagull. They're hiding it in this, and it's such a nice watch. It's very Paul Newman esque.
Yeah.
It was almost a vintage. It was almost a slam dunk in my eyes. Obviously, being what looks like a vintage reissue, they probably wanted to go closed case back for the purists. It just would have been nice to have the option. Yeah.
Cool. We've got one more that we're just going to sort of pricey. And it's the MR range. It's more like the sort of, you know, dress watch offering from Baltic. I've seen quite a few people with them, and they've said positive things. Again, there's sort of a salmon dial version that I really like. And there's a silver one too, as I like the look of. Again, loving the open case back they've got on them, you know, the colored jewels, the screws, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think it's my favorite compared to the others we've discussed. We touched on symmetry. We're going to go back to it again. I'm not a big fan that you lose the 7 and the 8. Exactly. Boo, hiss, boo, hiss. And again, the off-center sub-dial does not do it for me. The font as well isn't calling to me, and neither are the hands. But horses for courses, lots of people are buying them. I won't be one of them, but obviously I've already got a Baltic in the prismic stone dial, and I might even add another, like the bicompacts, the tricompacts. But I do like the brushed finish on the case, actually. So I've got something positive to say on that one. Zach, what do you think? And then George, do you want to round us out for the deep dive on Baltic before we go to the outro?
Definitely. So I'm always on the hunt for a dress watch. I kind of feel like dress watches is what got me into watches in the first place. So I love the look of this one. Like you mentioned, the 36mm version, the 36mm version of this watch with the salmon dial is absolutely stunning. And I believe it's the first Baltic I came across many moons ago on my Explore page that caught my attention. I love the 36mm case, the font on the indices I also love, and it's a nice quirk. The missing 7, which I know Tim doesn't really like, but that for me, that adds like a little unique touch. Adds a little nice.
7 and 8.
Sorry,
terrible.
Correction.
They didn't just kill one number, they killed two numbers.
That's two hours missing, unfortunately, but yeah.
Exactly. Super design. That's 25 to life, that is. That's terrible.
That's true. I also love the contrasting blue strap that comes with the salmon dial. I think it all ties in quite well. The price point is also very fair, I think, in my opinion, for those kind of looking for watch in that of that kind of standard. The only thing that I might add, because we like to have our little add-ons, is perhaps adding some blue hands that can kind of match and elevate the watch's appearance a little more, that can kind of coexist with the strap. But yeah, that's my thoughts on it. Could be wrong, could be right. What's your thoughts, George?
I think I quite like the MR range. And I think the main reason why is that it was very similarly to you, Zach. It was my introduction to Baltic.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think it was the first time I'd seen a cost-effective, relatively cheap micro-rotor movement. And I think it's what really put Baltic in the place it is now in the watch industry. It offered something new and was able to get something that's usually reserved for very, very high-end watches at a reasonable price. Using this Chinese movement, same as the Bel Canto was able to get a chiming watch on people's wrists at $3,000, wow. Or the 01 series from Studio Underdog was able to get a manual wind chronograph on people's wrists for £500. Like, it offered something new at a decent price that put it on people's wrists. The MR Salmon, I love the font. It's just gorgeous. I love that sub-dial. The small seconds or the sub-seconds, because it's very, in all ways, font, proportion, it's a very vintage-inspired watch. And it feels like just by skewing the sub-seconds slightly to the side, slightly to the left, they've made this watch contemporary.
Yeah.
In just a very, very simple way. I really, really like it. The MR Classic is the watch I like the most. I haven't reviewed that one. I've reviewed the MR Roulette. I think the sectioning off of the dial with the hour track and the minute track being all sectioned off. Very nice. Again, they are different finishes in each of them, same as the bi-compacts. It just looks a little bit busy to me. Yeah. And I prefer the style of the hands on the Classic to the Roulette. They're standard sword hands on the Roulette. They're much more elegant on the Classic, and it could have been done with some heat blue, and I definitely agree with you, Zach.
Cool. Well, no, thanks for rounding us out there. So we'll leave it there for this episode. Delighted to have you on, George, to talk about your fascinating and sort of fun journey creating a YouTube channel dedicated to watches. Certainly learned a thing or two myself. I'm really glad you could join us. You know, and we'd love to be guests for your show later in the year if you'll have us on. It'd be fantastic to sort of repay the favour. But I've enjoyed our sort of Baltic deep dive. It is one of my favourite micro brands out there. I think they're really smashing it. You know, if I didn't believe that, I wouldn't have bought one. I think they're doing a sterling job, so well done there, gents. And I can't wait for what they come up with next, to be honest with you. Shout out again to our winner of our sort of Insta shot of the month. Again, you get the beer mat that we'll flog to you free. Next time out will be Zach and myself. We're going to tee up those sort of watch industry interviews of 2025. The next one I'm particularly excited for, and using the medium of YouTube to do so. So don't forget to give us a follow and subscribe. So obviously, you've heard all about George now, so go on, watch yourself, George. And if you want to follow Zach, Source Watches, and myself, Watchword, Insta, and you know, and YouTube as well. So thanks for having you again, George. And it's sort of goodbye for us. And thank you for keeping time with the timekeepers.
Thanks for having me.